And today marked the 38th anniversary of the murder of Neil Agut by the apartheid security police. It's been a very emotional time for the only surviving member of the Agut family, Jill Berger, who is Neil Agut's sister. And today she gave a very moving tribute, a short but a moving tribute to her brother, as they stood under the trees at his grave. And the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation had, of course, set this in motion, having a kind of memorial service for Neil Agut 38 years after his death at John Forster Square. Now, you know that the inquest into his death has been reopened. Jill Berger's come out saying the first inquest during the apartheid times was a complete sham, and she's really glad that this inquest has been reopened. But I think it's been particularly difficult for family members, for friends, close friends of Neil Agut, to reflect on the death of this man, a very principled anti-apartheid activist, a unionist of the time, a doctor who served at local hospitals in the Pretoria area and so forth, and someone who was just very well respected by his fellow anti-apartheid activists. So I'm going to bring into the conversation the executive director of the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation, Nishan Bolton, who's organized the memorial service this morning. Nishan, good afternoon. Thank you very much for speaking to us today. Why did you feel it was necessary to have this ceremony this morning?
Well, it's something that we do annually. Last year, we marked the death of David Webster. This year, given the opening of the inquest, we thought it was important to bring a number of people to the gravesite, as many of them have not actually been there. This was the first time for his sister. It was the first time for Maurice Smithers and a number of others who actually just couldn't get to the grave at the time and didn't have the kind of fortitude to do it ever since. And we just thought it was an important point together to reflect, to pay tribute, and to complement the work that was in fact going on in the court and outside of the court today by the Food and Allied Workers Union and others as well.
Nishan, it must have been quite emotional. I mean, especially with his sister, she's lost all her other family members now, and she nurses this hope that there will be some sort of resolution in regard to the inquest that is currently underway. What was it like being there among people who were very close to Neil Agut at some point?
It was a mixture. There was a celebration of his life, his commitment, his activism. There was obviously the kind of deep reflection. But overall, there was a sense of the importance of an emerging story which hasn't really come through, and that is the kind of sacrifices of activists of the late 70s and 80s. We tend to revere the activists of the 1950s and 1960s, but very little of the stories of the people who were at the forefront in the 80s in the UDF and other formations have in fact come through. And we think that the trial and the testimonies that are coming through is in fact bringing out all of those incredible stories. But importantly, the essential character of the non-racial feature of that struggle is beginning to come through in a very powerful way. And those were the themes that emerged. I think lastly, the theme was to look at what do we do with perpetrators who didn't go to the TRC and who might well have been complicit or guilty in Neil's death, as well as the torture of many others. And there was a theme emerging that they do need to account for their own particular roles as well.
Tell me how you feel about the reopening of these cases so many years after. We're looking at a period of about 40 years after Neil Agut's death, roughly, that this case is now being brought to the fore again. There's so many other families who are still waiting for closure. How important is it that these cases are reopened, or do you think it's fair that people are simply expected to put this behind them and move on?
Not at all. I think without closure and without knowing the truth, there will never be justice and there will never be closure for many of the families, for many of the activists, and we will have an incomplete history of the time. And that is something that we can't afford.
What, you made an interesting comment about activists of the 80s being somewhat forgotten in our memory of the activism of the anti-apartheid movement. Why do you think that is, Nishan?
I think because many of them are still very active today. Many of them are probably in the 60s, 70s, and so forth. And you're starting to see some biographies emerge, autobiographies as well. But I think that we have been caught up with particular what we would call the golden era of activism, which is the 50s and 60s. And I think, as you've seen from this testimony, many have too many stories that are too painful to tell. And I think slowly it's a process of actually getting those out. It is something that we've found incredibly difficult to date. But I'm happy in the last year or so that there's a whole range of stories that have started to emerge, and there is a growing tradition of doing oral history and capturing oral history from activists who don't want to publish, but at least want to have their stories recorded.
I mean, it may be argued that there's been quite a lot of resistance from government for these old cases to be reopened, and it's only because of the work of people like Imtiaz Kaji, Ahmed Timol's nephew, that cases of this nature are being revisited within the context of our judicial system. Do you think there's any reason that the ANC would not have wanted these cases or the details of these cases to resurface post-democracy?
I don't think so. I just get a sense of a lethargic bureaucracy, as with many other aspects of life. I think the politicians might have thought it important. I think many bureaucrats wouldn't have understood the importance of this kind of work and would have been slow in terms of getting the wheels in motion. Because I can't see any other reason why this would have taken this long for these cases to have seen the light of day, and for many others. And I think both the Timol and the opening of the Agate inquest do lay the basis for us to understand what is required to start opening up the many others that still need to be done.
Let me ask you about the hurt that many families are living with as a result of the fact that many of the alleged perpetrators of this violence are still either walking the streets, have been integrated into society without any real consequences for what we believe are their actions, and that there's really been no closure at the same time for families. Those people have never necessarily told the truth and appeared before the TRC asking for amnesty. How is the South African public meant to read that, do you think?
I think in the first instance, many, and I, you know, the, when I listen to Prema Naidu and I listen to Ismail Memuniat, I think their testimonies at the Agate inquest have actually brought out things which even their own families might not have been aware of. So in the first instance, we do need a number of people to start talking about, and we need to create the forums for them to actually start sharing their own stories. And in that process, start some kind of healing. What we do with the perpetrators who are still walking around, I think that this the Timol inquest, the Agate inquest, and others to come will narrow that down. And hopefully some of them will be brought to book. And indeed, through getting some of them to account, the many others might find solace in that.
Thank you so much for speaking to us this afternoon. Nishan Bolton, he is, of course, the executive director of the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation.